Today on the Fozcast, we have got Premier League and Burnley striker J. Rodriguez. And he gave us an amazing insight to the level of detail that Vinny Kompany gives them at Burnley. He also told us about a scary leg injury he sustained early on in his career that could have led to a leg amputation, the amazing man management skills of Mauricio Pochettino, and also Burnley co-owner J.J. Watt putting the lads to shame in the Burnley gym. It's the Fozcast.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the podcast, mate. Before we get started, I've got to say, you are... You're kind of... ideal guest, isn't he, Tom?
Yes.
He's our ideal guest. So we've had a few people on the podcast that say, oh, my mate's been on the podcast. And I'm like, yeah, that's because kind of we go for a certain type of footballer. We call them the good guys.
Okay.
You're one of the good guys, all right? You're an ex-teammate of mine. And I will always and have always spoken glowingly of you. Because not only are you double handsome, you're just like a double lovely person as well. So welcome to the Fozcast. We've got to start with Burnley at this current moment in time. It's been a difficult season. I don't think anybody can deny that. Just from your perspective, how's it been going?
Yeah, like you said, it's been difficult. It's been, I'd say, you know, like a shock to the system in terms of the success we had last year. But I think we've learned as a group. We're a young group and we're still learning. But like you said, the Premier League don't wait for anyone. And I think the difference is that you get punished. But as a whole, like, I think as the group's learning and developing, I think that's the main aim for the club.
Is that the big difference, is that you get punished from being in the Championship where you're putting teams to bed early doors, you're absolutely battering them. Is the Premier League just that step up where it's so, so ruthless?
Yeah, I think you can see, obviously, the domination we had last year with the whole League of Championship, and then come to the Premier League, it's... You make a slight mistake and it's in the back of your net in three passes, and sometimes you sit there and you play really well, but come off the game 3-0 down and you think, how has that happened? Yeah. But that's why we love it. That's why everyone loves the Premier League, because it's got the best players, the fittest, strongest and best at tactics, and it's I think it's the best league in the world.
So from your perspective then, as a striker, what are the differences between playing in that Championship, scoring goals, knowing you're going to score goals, and then you make the step up to the Premier League? Obviously, you've got to back yourself. If you look at your Premier League career, 250 appearances, 47 Premier League goals. You're
46.
Nearly... 46, sorry.
I've nicked one off here.
46, sorry. You're nearly at the half-century club. You're nearly in that half-century club. That's some career. So what is the difference? How much harder is it playing in the Premier League?
I think for one, obviously... You know, the physical attributes of players now, especially defenders, you know, they're all monsters. They're all in the gym. They're all quick, strong, fast. But then I think for me, they're always one step ahead in the mind. So you try and make a movement and sometimes they're already there. Or I think that's the thing. You don't get as many chances that you do in the Championship.
Well, is that genuinely just like a physical ability, or is it kind of fitness, mental?
I think it's mental as well. You know, I think they're very switched on in terms of the sense of danger quicker. Like I say, if you get one chance in the game, you've got to take it, because you don't get three and four.
Do you know, as a player, like playing for a team, no disrespect to a Burnley, do you know, though, that you're probably only going to get one or two maximum chances in that game?
100%, yeah. I think that's the thing you've got to go on in the mindset. And that comes through in the training, that you've got to take your chances. If it's repetitive shooting, you've got to act as if it's your, you know, it's your one chance in the game. When you're tired and fatigued, you've got to replicate that. And that's the thing. That's why you have the top strikers in the Premier League that do it season out. That's why they are so good.
So say, right, I'm going to give you an example here then, yeah? So you're playing Liverpool tomorrow, yeah? You know you're coming up against Virgil van Dijk and Kouyaté. It could be Matip Yeah. What are you expecting, or how do you think you're going to try and get the better of somebody like a Virgil van Dijk?
You obviously, with nowadays, with the analysis that we have, we can look at weaknesses. I mean, to find a weakness on Van Dijk is...
He was a teammate of yours before as well, though, so you know a little bit about him at least.
Yeah, it's impossible. I mean, like, when he first came into the club, he's a great guy.
This is at Southampton, yeah?
Yeah. You train against him 11v11, and you know the old school thing. You make two runs, one for the defender, one for yourself.
Yeah,
mate, you're doing that, and he's giggling, but also in the right position, and then he just picks it up and keeps the ball. It makes you feel shit, really, doesn't it? You know what I mean? He's making the game so easier. So you got to try and find. You just got to try and find little ways. You know, like I said, against someone like Van Dijk, you can't really find much, but there will be maybe a lack of concentration or. Something happens in the game where you find yourself in a good position, then you got to take it.
That must mean then that he has to be on his A game, because for someone like Virgil van Dijk, he knows that the only way he's going to slip up is if it's a lapse of concentration, because he is so good.
That's the only thing I could say. You have to go off him is if he just has a lapse of concentration, or his teammates does something wrong, he has to cover, or you know, something. I'd say that's not his fault.
But in fairness, like he did like against Arsenal. So Virgil van Dijk, uncharacteristically, last weekend against Arsenal for Liverpool, had a bit of a mare, didn't he? He made a couple mistakes in the game. And that's not like him, is it? So no. That is probably the only way you're going to profit off somebody like that.
Yeah, I hope he does it again.
Would you say he's the best defender you've ever played against?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah?
Yeah, definitely. He's... Obviously, I've been lucky enough to play alongside him as well, so you can see, I think, his first game he came in to Southampton just came straight in. We played against West Brom, actually.
It was a big money move from Celtic at the time as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was,
And he dictated the game, and he'd only trained like half the week, I think, and he dictated the game, and I'm thinking, this guy's unbelievable already. And then, obviously, the more you get to know him, the way he works, the guy he is, the captain he is, I think he's definitely the best.
It's funny, isn't it? Because everyone knows how good he is, right? And then... We all know that stats, you know, football isn't purely a game of stats. But when we did the top 10 best Premier League defenders of all time, we did kind of like some forensic analysis on the stats. And actually, when you put his stats out there on paper, you go, oh, wow, he is standout. Like, I think it was an Ariel Jules one, I think, versus Lott. He was so high compared to all of his peers, it was frightening.
I got absolutely battered, for saying that I think Virgil van Dijk, in the peak of his powers, you know, remember like 2-3 years ago, Virgil van Dijk?
Yeah.
When he was
head
and shoulders above everybody else, right?
Yeah.
I said, in his pomp, at the peak of his powers, he is probably the best defender that's ever lived. And I got absolutely battered on the internet for that.
He did get clipped up a fair amount. Yeah. But I think...
You can understand it, surely.
You can understand it, obviously. Then people go back to all the greats. And,
yeah, exactly.
So I think it's always difficult to compare the greats and to this day and age, this modern game. And, you know, you can never really compare. But I'd agree with you. I think you look at his game, not just obviously defending quality, but he can control a game just... By the way, he passes the ball. He can hurt you from the defence.
This is like his body shape as well. It's the way that he sort of like composes himself, the way he stands and looks. I think his body language gets in other people's head, doesn't it? You look at it, you just think, you're unflappable. You're in control of every single thing you're doing.
And when the ball's kind of like played in behind or something, when he's one-on-one, like people say, like jockeying, he doesn't jockey, he stalks.
He stalks, doesn't he? All right, go on, keep going.
Because he's, 6'4"?
Yeah.
And he's so like mobile, isn't he? Like agile on his toes. Yeah.
Say you're playing a Premier League game tomorrow. What sort of defender do you not want to be coming up against? Who is the kind of guy that you're? Or what sort of a defender? Do you know what I mean? Is it a rapid one? Is it physical? Yeah.
Virgil van Dijk.
Yeah. But I'd always say as well. I think someone like Kyle Walker.
When
I played at Southampton, I was more like a left side, and I come up against him, and it's so difficult.
Do you just know you're not going to get anything?
You have to, like I say, you have to try and find a way, and I think he's trying to do a 1-2, and he's quick enough to, recover. You try and dribble him, and he just wakes you off the pitch. It's awful.
Do you think there's like a whole bunch of left-sided players in the Premier League that when they come up against Man City, just like they all look at each other and go, "Oh, for God's sake!
Yeah, just keep me quiet. Yeah, just keep it on that side." But no, he's like I say, the career he's had, and you know, dedication he's put into the game. You can see how much he works and what a player he is. And yeah, I'd say he's the one that you don't look forward to playing against.
He's phenomenal, isn't he?
He is. Yeah. He's different level. He's still at a different level now. Even I know he was getting linked with a move to Bayern Munich in the summer. I was thinking, no, what are you doing? I think Sheffield United were actually linked for him for a little bit, weren't it?
Not yet.
Yeah.
Not yet.
Probably a good decision to say at City, mate. Right, let's have a little bit of Vinny Kompany talk then. Last season, absolutely stormed it. He's playing a new style of football with a Burnley squad that kind of historically, under Sean Dyche especially anyway, is kind of everybody saw them as this bruising, kind of get the ball forward as quickly
direct
as you can,
team,
direct, get it in the box. And then Vinny Kompany's walked in and completely changed it all. How much have you enjoyed working under him?
Yeah, I have. Obviously, the success of last year and the Championship, I think the way we played, the way we became champions, I think that is, you know, that was one of the best feelings in terms of how we dominated games and created chances. And just I think that feeling of having the disappointment of the year before to then bounce back is obviously, everyone knows it's really difficult. But for us to do it that way, it's been great. And like I say, you learn a lot from the way he wants us to play. Like you watch football a little bit different now in terms of, you know, you build up, how you build up from the back, how you use the keeper, how you don't get locked. So you watch games now, I mean, you're watching top games and you're thinking some of the top teams are still, as he'd say, getting locked.
What does that mean?
So it means obviously going one side, and then you know when you get pressed to the side and you get shown one way, he hates that and he wants you to come out and use the extra man, which sometimes, well, more than often now, is the keeper or a midfielder or sometimes an inverted fullback. There's a lot of different ways of outnumbering and then you don't get locked, so then you can dictate how you build the next phase. It's really interesting, and like I say, it's always good to learn. I've always said in football that if you continue to learn, then you're motivated to keep going, and I think you learn a lot from it.
What's that like in training then when you're working on that? So take you back to the beginning of last season, it's all change at Burnley, new manager comes in, he wants to play a completely different style of football. How quickly do players get on board with that? Or is it very much a case of he's looking at his squad and saying, right, I don't think they're equipped for what I want to do, so I'm going to bring a load of other players in?
Yeah, obviously the pre-season was, you know, again, it was a lot of information and a new way of playing. I think we had a good group of lads that really took it on board. And I think we got beat by, our last pre-season game was Newcastle, and we got battered really. And I think it was a little bit like we were a bit worried.
Was that kind of trying the new style of play?
Yeah, it was the way we've been working all pre-season. Yeah. And not like as if we were worried, but we're thinking like,
What if this happens in the Championship?
You're always like a confidence boost, don't you, before you go into the season. So we're thinking, but then obviously we just kept with the message and continued. And then you see the games. And even the start of the Championship, people forget that we had a lot of draws and games we should have won, but that was all part of the learning process.
Yeah, it wasn't until kind of, say, 10 games in, really, where you really started to find what worked for you, and it was just relentless from that point, wasn't it?
That's it, yeah. You know, it was kind of like how we, you know, educate everyone else as well around the way we play. You know, we're not just kicking it long, we're doing it, building up for a reason to get to the next. And then once you start seeing the goals go in and the positive things, that's when you start seeing things flowing.
What is? Can you try and describe? Sorry, Tom, but I'll keep butting over you here. Questions just keep popping in my head though, because for the listeners at home, for the viewers, can you explain what the big sort of positives are of building up from the back? Because I think a lot of people think, what are you doing messing about with it at the back there? Just get it forward. Like, what are the big main reasons if you can do it properly and do it well?
I think it's, that he always says the end goal is to get a shot on target or score. That is, you're not just playing around the back for no reason.
Yeah.
So obviously you work in numbers and you outnumber how they press.
Yeah.
So you know you always have one man. So
is that to pull them out of position then? Really,
to
as
pull
well?
Them out of position, and then you outnumber them on the back line maybe, and then that's when you create an overload on the back post, or you create an overload in your attack to then score a goal. And it's always about to score a goal. So that's the main. It's not about passing around the back for no reason. It's obviously to...
Yeah, I think people see kind of like a pass that doesn't really look like it's doing anything, right? But every single pass does something. It genuinely does, doesn't it? It does something. It will drag a player a little bit closer, an opposition player. It might entice him just a little bit, which means that if he gets pulled out of position, the player behind him looks and goes, I need to fill that space a little bit. And that's the goal of it as well, isn't it? To just slowly try and get people out of where they're supposed to be.
Definitely. I think you see Brighton now, the way they play. I spoke to Lallana and it was incredible. You know, we played him at their place. We got a good point, which I thought was a great point against a great team. But you're coming to press and you move a slightly to the right or left out of position. They play it through the middle and it's a little 1-2, and then that they're in your box, and you're thinking it's that quick, that this little pass, it's a little bounce pass that makes you move, and that's the aim, is to try and get a chink in their armour that you can get through them.
So is this then your job then? So you're playing Brighton, for example, yeah? Mm. Is this your job here to be so disciplined with how you press and when you press and understanding the opposition at what they're trying to do? So you say, no, I'm not getting pulled out of position here. I've got to stay here, because if they play it through that middle space, my teammates are thinking, Jay, any chance?
Literally, you get hammered if you let anything through the middle, especially against them, that they play the little intricate passes, and you've got to be so diligent in terms of how you press. And we set up traps and stuff, and it's, you've got to be really strict on that, because it's, if not, you're blown up on the meeting, and yeah, it's not personal, but you've got the circle around you, and it's
there's nothing worse, I promise you. The team meetings, Tom, where you know you've got it coming. So like, you'll be watching the video, like reviewing it, and the manager will be doing it in front of the whole team, the coaches, everything. And you know that if you played a role in that first goal going in, where you got dragged out of position, you're sitting there thinking, he's going to say my name, he's going to say, and Jay, what you, and you're going, yeah, I know, it's horrible, isn't it?
You're sinking your seat and think, oh, please get over it.
There's a question I've got. It's probably be unfair to ask you, Jay. Ben, with Vincent Kompany then being the type of manager that we've heard about, is there an argument to say that that way with Burnley doesn't work, and maybe the style needs to be a bit more direct, because you hear all these great things, but ultimately they're in the red zone?
Oh, you want me to take this one? Yeah, yeah. I understand. It's probably a tough one for you to answer, to be fair. I think, from the outside looking in, obviously you're in it and you get to see the quality of the players that are doing,
because we know
job,
that Vincent Kompany's at some point going to go on to a bigger team.
You would have thought,
right?
So,
you'd,
yeah,
think, no disrespect.
You'd have thought so?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Definitely.
But right now, for Burnley, is there an argument, Ben, that maybe needs to be a more direct style or change it up a bit more?
It probably does, but I think also it's a fairly young team, that Burnley squad, isn't it? It's a fairly young team, and to go and do that in the Premier League, like I say, the step up is massive. It's vast. You could absolutely steamroll the Championship, but it doesn't matter, because when you make that step up into the Premier League, it's ridiculous to step up. It's crazy. I'd say that if they have another year or two of doing this, they would be better equipped. So if they went down at the end of the season, which, in all honesty, it looks fairly likely. You never know, though. I would say you'd like to think they'd keep the core of players, they'd steamroll the Championship again, and they'd be much better equipped to do it in the Premier League in a couple of years' time. So I think that is probably the reason why Burnley, in the way it looks from the outside, is that Burnley want to get away from this get it up there and bash it football kind of thing. They want to become a football-playing football team, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, and like I said, I think that's the beauty of football. There's no right or wrong way to play the game. You know, it's results-based, and it's not to say that playing it forward quicker is the worst way to play. You know, there's so many different ways to win a game, but I feel like obviously it's a system that the club are going for, and I think it's able to bring young players through and coach them in terms of playing this way and improving, and that's the way I think the model is going.
Here's a question for you then. When a Vincent Kompany comes into a Burnley football club, like I say, they've been set in their way of playing a certain type of football for all these years. When Vincent Kompany walks through the door, does the whole football club change? From, we're talking academy, we're talking 23s, reserves. Does everybody then say, right, no, this is the style of football that we're playing, and we're going to do it from under 10s all the way up
to
the senior team?
That's what happened really with that blueprint DNA with England, yeah, all those years ago. And I think this, like with Brighton now, we were talking about it on the car on the way up, almost about that succession planning, that when De Zerbi goes, yeah, the next one will come in and they'll fit the mould of, this is how we play as a club.
The same with players. So that's, yeah, what I mean. Yeah, when he walks in then, does he go to all the age groups, this is how we play, so that if a first team player does get injured, we don't necessarily need to go and buy somebody for 10 million quid. We've got somebody that might not be as experienced, but he knows the role at least.
Yeah, I think that's what's happened. I think they go through the whole club, and it's got to be a right way. You can't have the young lads playing a certain way and then come to the first team and it's totally different. It's got to be some sort of pattern that when, like you say, a young lad does step up, or like injuries, or a young lad's doing really well, that he can just step in and take the role of playing for the first team. So I think that's a really healthy way to be in terms of a club, because obviously then again, you look at the financial side of it, then you're bringing players through that are going to do well in the first team that possibly you could sell for a profit, and that's another way
of economics as well.
Do you want to talk about teammate of yours, obviously with the style of play, a lot of I guess a lot of pressure for a young man, someone you're a big fan of, James Trafford.
Oh, James Trafford, good goalie, right?
Yeah, great goalie, yeah. Good lad as well. a farmer boy he is.
Yeah, he's a proper farmer boy, isn't he? He's like a little tramp, isn't he?
He is though, isn't he? You're saying this because you know he's gonna message you and
I like him though. I love him to bits. He sends me random messages on Instagram sometimes and he takes the piss out of me as well. And I love it.
It's because he calls you old, isn't he?
He calls me the old fox, I pulled him up and I said, "Don't call me the old fox." He's like, "Right, the wise fox." Like, right, that's better. he's a great lad, to be fair. And you know, again, he's young and he's learning. And you see, like, even the game against Fulham, the saves he pulled off in the second half were great to keep us in the game. Again, he's learning and willing to learn. So, you know, you put your arm around him, try and help him.
What were your thoughts on the Luton goal that went in a few weeks ago as a striker? Is that a foul?
So obviously, you know, you can't touch a keeper, can you?
No chance.
So for me, I'm like, I didn't even check I was on the bench, I didn't even check the VAR or anything. I was like, that's definitely a foul because you can't touch a keeper.
Yeah.
And you see him look, but if it happens on the pitch, I don't know if it's in the middle of the pitch, is it a foul? I'm not sure, but I think for me, it's a clear foul.
It's a clear foul, isn't it?
Yeah, because he's coming out and the guy's stopped him from doing what he needs to do. So
you know that if that was you, you're getting pulled up for that. That's a goal getting disallowed, isn't it?
I think, you know, if I'm the striker, I'm thinking, just keep your head down, hope for this.
run away.
This is definitely going to get called off.
I want to ask you what Vinnie Kompany's like as a manager, because after that game, I watched an interview that he did and he was talking about the actual incident. And the way that he talks is very calm, very concise. Considering it was a disgrace of a decision, and it's robbed you of 3 points, he very calmly spoke about it. Is that what he's like as a manager? Is that his management style?
Yeah, I think he's very rare. He goes, shouting and screaming. I think he only does if he doesn't see lads working hard. I think that's a big thing for him, is to work hard. I think you can accept mistakes and stuff like that, because that's natural. Everyone's human. I think if you see there, he's obviously looked through everything, and he'll put forward a measured approach to it. And I think we've been done a little bit with VAR, quite a lot on some things. Yeah. And I think you spoke about it earlier before, that I think it's better to not have VAR.
Really? Do you think?
I think obviously having last year with the Championship, and it's the whole thing, you score and you know, you look at the linesman, look at the referee, and then they don't give anything. Oh, you've scored. But now it's like, even if you score a clear goal, you're kind of in the back of your mind thinking something could come up here.
Is that a factor? So I don't think we've had a Prem striker on for a while, have we? So yeah, so if you score a goal that's like legit, you know it's a goal, do you hold back on celebrating?
I think you score the goal, you go mad.
Yeah.
And then there's always that thing in the back of your head.
Very quickly. That two or three seconds.
Is the referee looking? Is he doing this? Is he going to go? And you're thinking, oh no, please. And then they give the goal, and then that's when you're buzzing again. But It is a strange one, I think, especially when we're still getting things wrong. So I'd rather, you know, give the benefit of the doubt to the referee. If he's got a decision wrong, it's such a difficult error.
Can we ever really, realistically, within the world of technology that we live in, can we ever go back?
We had Lukas Fabianski on the podcast the other day, and he said the same thing, basically. He said he hates it. He said he played in a FA Cup match, actually, the week before against Bristol City. He said, and it was incredible. He said, even though we lost the game, he said, honestly, it was incredible just to play a game where you know that if the referee doesn't give it, it is what it is, and you'll accept it. He said, but not only that, he said, we're so used to the stopping and starting of VAR. He said, playing in the Premier League, you're so used to it stopping and starting. It's almost like you get time to breathe and get time to refresh yourself.
Yeah.
He said, but we played this game and it was just end to end. He said it was relentless. You're always running. And he said, honestly, I think it had an impact on our team's performance.
Yeah, I think it does. It obviously stops start. I mean, I think they won Bournemouth when I was offside, it took a while to come to the decision. I think it was 5 minutes, and lads are talking there, and you think we need to keep warm here, because it just slows the game. The momentum, we had a bit of momentum then, slows the momentum. Whereas I think Championship, like I say, I think that's what football's about. You know, fans go into the pub afterwards and talk, "Oh, we've been robbed today," or you go, "The referee didn't
see
that." Still
hard to be fair, which is why.
Yeah, but it makes you even angrier.
Yeah, exactly.
When you've been robbed and somebody has looked at it and still robbed you.
Do you, here's a question for you both. Do you think that fans and players, if we went back to old world, would be a little less harsh on referees?
Yes, 100%. Totally think they would.
Do you think?
I think you have to be.
Honestly, you know, refereeing is such a difficult job. You know, the pace it's at now, and, you know, you can miss things, and even as players, you miss things on the pitch, and for them to miss... to not see everything, is fine. I think, you know, you kind of go, that happens, mistakes happen as humans. So.
I think we, like I said, we're, as players, you'd look at it from a player's perspective and what it means to you and how much it detracts from the game for you. But football, as everybody knows, it's for the fans. Without the fans, it wouldn't be a thing. And I think we are spoiling the show, the spectacle, the entertainment for the fans. It takes away from it so much. The fact that you can't lose yourself in a stadium. You can't lose yourself when you're watching on the telly when your team has scored.
It's really true.
It's sad, isn't
Especially
it?
Especially like when you get to like the 88th minute or whatever, they put the board up and you see 14 minutes. Oh, and you're like, come on. Oh, really? Like, it's just soul destroying, isn't it?
Soul destroying.
And you bat late as well, aren't you?
Well, you are kind of, I think you, if we had a tally for all the footballers that we've had on, that, well, I've asked the question, yes or no. Not one has said yes. One has said yes. They'll have said to a point, maybe for offsides, maybe for the goal line decisions, which is absolutely fine. But everything else, just let the referee do it.
Yeah. I agree. I think probably most of the lads that you know I've played with say the same thing.
Okay, there you go.
Right, I've got a date for you, Jay Rodriguez, that I think you might know what I'm talking about. The 15th of November, 2013. Do you know what this is?
You should know what this is.
England.
Yes, your England debut.
2013, geez.
2013.
That, and the worst.
I know, over 10 years ago. Yeah, see, he's right, mate. James Trafford knows what he's talking about. The old
wise,
fox.
The wise fox.
Not the old fox.
Wise fox.
So you made your England debut. We're going to talk about the actual game and the debut itself first, but I want to talk about that whole sort of selection procedure when you knew you were getting called into that first team. How did the call come? Where did it come from? How proud of it were you, your family, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, it was obviously just turning up for training, walking past the office.
You were at Southampton at this time, yeah.
You always walk past the manager's office and then you get a knock on the window through the blinds and sometimes you don't want that because you're getting hooked
coming
in.
Here, yeah.
So I go in and then they kind of like...
Who tells you, Jay?
It were Maurizio and the owner, Nicola Cortese as well, yeah. So they were like, pleased to say. Well, they kind of brought me in and everyone looked a little bit down. Jesus, Miggy, Tony, they're unbelievable people. I love them to bits. And I'm thinking, I've done something wrong here. What's happened? And then they go, yeah, you're in England. And I was like, what? And then I said, F off. I was like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, no way, there's not a chance. They're winding me up. And then they're like, yeah, big hugs and that. And then they're like, all right, go to training.
Oh,
and that was
that's
it. And
nice.
Then, obviously, you send a few texts, go to training, and you're just on the cloud now. You're thinking, what the hell? And then, obviously, when it happens, it's surreal. Like people that you've looked up to, and like you're warming up. And I mean, I always remember it sticks in my head, just warming up and throwing. You know, doing the volley, going to get next one. I'm throwing a ball to Lampard, and he's giving me back in Gerrard. I'm thinking, this is not normal. A lad from Burnley's doing this. So I think I've won a ticket or something. It's mad.
And the other strikers in that team at that time, so Wayne Rooney, Jermaine Defoe. When you get to see them up close and personal, what was the standard like?
That's when you realise that it's a different level to what you've experienced.
Really?
You know, it's the training's different level. I mean, Jermaine Defoe's finishing is like the best I've seen.
Scary,
you know, just to see it and how he hits it.
Instant.
And how hungry he is for goals and just in training. And I learned so much in that week. And then with Rooney, I just think he's just a different level of player.
What was it? What was it about Rooney?
It's just the way he hits the ball and the way he plays. We've got a small side of game and he was so aggressive to win the game. And like I remember Gary Neville was... You know, like the referee almost, and he were hammering him because he didn't give him a decision. And I'm thinking this guy's like the top of his game, probably could relax, but he wants more and more. And I just really looked up to him then, you know, to see him and learn so much in that week.
And did Roy, so Roy Hodgson was the manager at the time, did he pull you before the game in the days leading up to the game and tell you that you're going to be starting?
Yeah, so he pulled me in, adds Lallana in, him and Gary Neville said, you're going to be starting tomorrow. And I think Gary Neville said something like, you don't shit yourself, like, have a good sleep. You know?
But like, there's so many people in these little comments that the guy's Neville, love it.
And to be fair, I did shit myself. I was sat there. I was like, oh, I couldn't believe it. I remember speaking, obviously, to my wife and my parents and that. And we just a surreal moment. We played Chile. So obviously, they were an unbelievable team and we got battered. And I remember coming off the pitch, like, really disappointed that I felt miles off it.
Yeah.
Felt really miles off
Why?
It.
Why?
Because they were so good, and it was, you know, you always doubt yourself, don't you? You always want to try and improve and, you know, establish yourself. And I just, obviously getting beat 2-0 and didn't really, I don't think I got a shot off and stuff, and I'm, you know, really debating your head like, I'm miles off it. But Lucky I got called up again, so it was nice.
What was the most nervous part of that whole kind of in the lead up to the game? Was it the actual game? Was it in the tunnel? Was it the night before?
I think probably the night when you're playing, everything goes in. Yeah. You just look at it and you're playing just a game of football. I think that's always the case with myself. Is I think it's more the night before than obviously singing the national anthem.
Yeah.
Don't get the words wrong. Even though you know the words, it's like, don't mess up.
Were you quiet or were you belt it out?
I was quiet, but I think obviously as you get older, you'd be belting it out.
Sure,
singing loud and proud. But it's, things like they're the ones that know. But as soon as the whistle goes, it's like, right, I'm on it then.
What is the nerves? Where do they come from though? What is the worry? Is it the worry of kind of you know you're gonna have the nation's eyes on you, you know you're gonna have all your family's eyes on you, you're gonna have a lot of people watching? Is it the worry of kind of not performing basically? Is that what automatically takes over your head?
That's the one thing, yeah. It's not embarrass yourself, not perform. I never feel it from my family or friends. They always support you no matter what. They'll tell you if you've played shit or played well.
Yeah.
But I think when it's in England, it's a totally different. You feel the pressure from the, you know, there's press. It's just a massive occasion, and it was mainly that to not do myself justice.
That was, in fairness, a tough time to be an England player, wasn't it? You know, remember back in that time where Roy Hodgson was manager, it was very different to what it is nowadays with Gareth Southgate, isn't it? That was the time when you felt like the media were out to get you.
Yeah,
it was horrible, wasn't it?
Yeah, like I said, like the players that we had there was just incredible, the talent. But yeah, it was difficult. But like I said, Chile was unbelievable. And the lad who plays is now Lawrence Vigouroux. He was on the bench actually.
Was he?
Yeah, he's a ledge guy.
The goalie that actually played for Chile at that time was Claudio Bravo.
Yeah.
So I remember the game. I remember it really well actually. We got beat 2-0. Alexi Sanchez scored, I think, in the 7th minute, and then the 80th or 90th minute or something like that. Anyway, but their style of play, Chile, was incredible, very technical, very sort of pass and move, very Pep-esque, really.
Yeah.
But Claudio Bravo, I remember he was popping the ball around from the back. He was cutting out the press from England. It was phenomenal to watch. So much so that actual individual performance is what earned him the move to Man City.
Yeah, it was incredible. Like to go and press him, and then they were just getting out of a tight situation, but then working so hard without the ball, they were ruthless without the ball. They didn't give you a minute.
Aggressive and, as well, Chileans.
Kicked you off the park. obviously, you love it now. You love to see it, but not when you're playing. You just give me a break.
That's a baptism of fire. They'll fire that for you. Definitely. To say that again.
When you talk about England, getting called up with England, you even said when you were there in your earlier days, Ben, that it was a bit clicky. So was it nice to go with a couple of teammates? Obviously Ricky Lambert and Adam Lallana and yourself all got called up at the same time, right?
Yeah, Luke Shaw as well.
Oh, of course.
So obviously we just stuck together, like, we walked in with his tracksuits on as well, like proper little busy things. Like.
Well, were you Southampton tracksuits? Yeah. Oh, you're horrible.
I know, we didn't know what to do, I don't think.
You'd have played the game on a Saturday or Sunday then for Southampton and then just reported straight to the England setup from there?
Got picked up on Sunday, straight there, yeah.
In your Southampton trackies.
Yeah, I think we learned a little bit since.
That Southampton team, sorry, you just mentioned a few of the names there, though, but do you remember how many of them played? That was some Southampton team, by the way. Mauricio Pochettino, I want to talk about him in a minute as well. But that Southampton team, you had some players. It was that era of Southampton players that they were just milking Liverpool for money. Every transfer window. Isn't it? Yeah. Can we have another 50 million quid? There's another one. Can we have another 50 million quid, please?
It was, yeah. I mean, obviously when Pochettino came in, and then the way we played, you know, high press, attacking football, I think we took it a little bit by storm. I think we had a really good team, like a great group of lads. Like I said, I love Maurizio and Jesus, Miggy and Tony, the really top people, great people. What they did for my career and what I learned in that time it stuck with me forever. Yeah.
Speak about some of the players that got moved there. So go through it. We've got a nice little list here.
From what, sorry?
From Southampton at that time. So
I got a list?
Dejan Lovren.
I haven't got a list. Dejan Lovren.
Oh, no, let's just talk about them then. Dejan VVD. Lovren, Virgil van Dijk, Ricky Lambert got a move to Liverpool. Yeah. Adam Lallana got a move. Sadio Mane got a move.
Nathaniel Clyne.
Luke Shaw, big move to Manchester United.
Yeah.
Kyle Walker-Peters. No, that he went to Southampton.
Yeah, he did.
Chambers.
To Arsenal. There you go. That's what I mean. That Southampton team was proper. So I want to talk about Mauricio Pochettino then. I mean, somebody who's worked under him. I heard some stories a few years ago that when he was Tottenham manager, he was at Southampton before Tottenham, but his coaching methods were sort of he expected an awful lot of you. We're talking double sessions, early part of the week, real high intensity, expected a lot from you. Is that what he's like?
Definitely, yeah. It was, I remember we finished the season. We did really well because we stayed up. He came in halfway through. And he's like, have a good summer, everybody, but prepare to work when you come back. And when you hear that, your heart sinks and you're coming in. And then we went to a place called Perelard and it was intense. I think like we spent two, three weeks there and it was intense. They call it like the Spanish gym where you know, you got the Vertimax on and you repeat running. Then you go to the next station. You do that twice and your legs, you literally can't walk. And then you go outside and train. And then the next session the day after is 11v11.
Oh.
And it's, he always said like, we'll do half an hour. And you were playing for an hour. Definitely, sometimes you come off and you go, you're like Gaffer, and he's like, no, look, the time.
Yeah, all right.
And then Jesus is like, he's laughing because he knows that he's carried on. But it created that intensity of like, if, you know, taking the last step, taking a player out, and it got really fasty. And I think that's how we played. And I thought that was the fittest I've ever been.
And if players weren't up to it, if players couldn't sort of perform at that level or give him that intensity, would it be a case of, I'll work with you, or was it a, listen, this might not be the club for you?
No, I think that's the thing. It's always an arm around you, bring you in, what's happening, everything okay, family okay. And that's the thing, I think players fell in love with him because he loved you as a person, not just a footballer. He'd take you in, he'd notice things if you were off. I think that pre-season, I remember we went to Austria after that and I think I was, must have had a bad sleep, but it was really hard training. So the next day we're just jogging around the pitch and I was knackered and I'm just jogging and my feet are like dragging a little bit. But you know, first thing you do is jogging. Pulls me out of the warm-up. He's like, what's up? I was like, nothing. He's like, why are you dragging your feet? So he notices everything. And then,
really?
So next time I'm jogging like a gazelle, yeah. so he don't pull me, but he notices everything. Every little detail and notice it. But then always check if you're okay.
Do you think that appeals to players more than the shouter and the screamer, somebody who's the people skills, basically? Is that what a manager you want?
100%, yeah, because I think when he does shout, because he did shout and scream and lose his temper, you know, it means
he's justified.
Yeah, because he's hurt him, that he feels that, and he tells you, and he did it that season, actually. I had a great season apart from the injury, but I was playing, I was not low in confidence, but like that lacking the belief. Mm. So I'm playing, working hard. After the game, he comes in and is like, you have to believe, like, really goes at me. The next day, we come in, get the knock on that window, go in, and he's got everyone there. And he's like, look, I'm going to fine you a week's wage if you don't give me everything you've got. I said, I am. I'm working hard. He went, no, I believe more. So I'm thinking, obviously, I'm tight as fuck anyway. It's been Northern.
Northern, you've got to be.
So I was like, obviously, in the next game, I perform really well. And he just tries to unlock these, you know, things, and tries to work it out and believe, and gives you belief, really.
Well, it's that human touch, isn't it? If you know that somebody is watching you and somebody really cares about you, to just the little things, little remarks here and there, and you'd know that would stick in your brain.
He reminds you a little bit of, I think you hear stories of when Jose was at Chelsea the first time round, and the relationship.
The special one.
Jose, when he was the special one. Those relationships he had with the players.
I've got a question. What was the harder pre-season, that or a Tony Pulis Austria?
Oh, Jesus. I think it was spoiled because we went to, we did the cup, didn't we, the Asia Cup.
Oh, we went to Hong Kong, didn't we?
A bit messed up. But that week at Pulis was disgusting.
It was disgusting, wasn't it? Can you remember the 6 o'clock hill runs? It would be a 1 o'clock football session and then 6 o'clock at night, like, I don't know what it would be, another football session or something.
Talking football, isn't it?
Talking,
but it was, you'd wake up, that's our room with Alan Neam. And we used to get up at 5 o'clock, I think, half five, wake up call. Yeah. And we'd just both be at the bed and he'd be like, we cannot do this anymore. And it's like second day in. And I was like, I was fully on board. I was new to it, so I was fully on board with like, yeah, we can't do this anymore. But you would be there at start, cup of coffee. And then that first day, I remember thinking, what the hell have I done? But after the week, like, you felt great. Everyone was like integrated. Yeah. It was, had a real purpose. I'd probably say overall, Pochettino's pre-season, but that week will stick with me forever.
So in that famous, so we had Tony on a few months ago, didn't we? And we were talking about, you did the riding on the mountain bikes, not as much running, did you?
Yeah, so the outfield players would do the running. Yeah. The older or bigger players, me and Boaz, maybe Jonas Olsen, we would get the bikes and we would do it on the bikes instead of the running.
So who was in your like running group for up these hills?
So for some reason, Pulis put me in the, I think it must have been the top group because I was in with McLean.
You're a fit lad though, in fairness.
Yeah, but I don't know, he should have thrown me in the middle just to get me involved, you know, but he stuck me with Dawson. Obviously, Dawson hates getting beat, doesn't he?
Dawson's a machine, in fairness. Yeah.
So we set off, and it's like, I think it's like 16 runs, but this hill's massive. And then McLean sets off, like, I've never seen anything like it. And I'm like thinking, yeah, good lad. He's gonna knock off, like, after
this
three
is James McLean. This, yeah, is James McLean, by the way. Yeah.
And 16th one, I think he's got quicker, and it doesn't faze him. After the 16th one, I got on the back. We have to cycle back, and my eyes are closed. My ears won't pop. I'm like in a pickle. I'm slavering. Honestly, I'm a mess. And I remember Mozza going, "Yeah, you're right, mate." I was like, "No, I'm really struggling here." And he's like, "You've got a week of this, lad. Just get on with it." And I'm thinking, what are we doing? But like I said, after the week, I felt great. You feel great, don't you?
And what, James McLean's just chilling?
Oh, mate, he is a joke. It's hard to explain. It's hard to explain.
I can't just wait to get him on.
Just how fit, just how strong and mentally... Oh, he's an animal.
He
floats up. He doesn't. His heel doesn't touch the floor when he runs. It's just his tiptoes.
Yeah,
he just floats up.
He loves it as well. Loves it. Yeah. I remember Pulis, like, I think it was like towards the end of the week. He was like, "Get past Dawson," and I was like, "I've been trying all fucking week. I can't get past him." I mean, if I did get past Dawson, he'd probably tackle me anyway.
You mentioned that actually. I remember the time when you had a little bit of a naughty ankle injury and you were out for like a few weeks, month, or whatever, right? And you know what I'm about to say here as well, right? This is Craig Dawson in a nutshell, by the way. So Jay Rodriguez has been out for, I don't know, two months, say, with an ankle injury. It was a bad ankle injury. First day back at training, first day back with the team, contact, playing six sides or whatever.
No, it wasn't me. He was out with a bad ankle. I've been playing.
Is this the opposite?
Yes. Yeah,
so I've been telling this story wrong along.
It was his first session back in training. So like everyone's taking it easy on him.
No, the one where you go, nah, doors.
Yeah, yeah, that, I wasn't injured. He nearly, you tell us.
Go on then.
Yeah. I've got this completely
wrong. You have had Craig up here, haven't
I've
you?
Got this completely wrong.
No, it's still bad for me. Right?
So go on, you tell telling me how it happened then.
So he came back from injury.
Yeah.
Everyone's taking it easy on the small games. You know, someone coming back from injury, you let him, you give it benefit of doubt, make sure they get into it and stuff. And I think the ball's bouncing, small set. You know when you know no one's near you and you fully volley a ball, it's bouncing in it. You remember it? And he comes from a hero challenge from nowhere and nearly breaks my foot, doesn't he?
Yeah.
For exactly. No reason.
From no, like it's a nothing thing. It's just, just relax, Craig, yeah? Just relax. It's not that important, right? So he's fuming. But because Jay is honestly, when I say he's one of the good guys, he is one of the good guys. So Dawson out of nowhere, just blindsided him, smashed him, taking him out. He's fuming, like, but he won't swear. He won't get up and rant and rave. He just gets up in his broad northern accent and goes, "Nah, Dawson, you're the fucking dickhead, man."
Is that how it sounds?
Yeah. He said it so loud because everybody just saw this tackle coming and gone, as if to say, like, what are you doing? And it's gone like complete silence. Nah, doors, and we are pissing in ourselves. Every one of us just starts chuckling, shoulders going up and down. But that's imminent. Like I say, you need players like that, the ones that aren't going to go cause a fuss or anything like that. Dawson knew what. Dawson's all over. He's a dickhead, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's a
whopper. He does it all the time. He does it in the games. We play against him now, and he gives
that's
you
his favourite thing.
Yeah, he gives you an elbow, and then you're like, Dawson, come on. He just starts laughing. But you do it to him and he's not bothered. That's the worst thing about it.
The thing is though, his elbows, I'm sure, are made of like harder bone. They are. He's got harder bone than everybody else, hasn't
he?
He's horrible, man.
This just picture of Craig Dawson just is building and building and building.
No, but you know what? If we had him on the podcast, he'd be really quiet, wouldn't he?
He'd be
really nice and he'd be like, no, that's not what I'm like. No, that's what I'm like. Because he's a lovely, again, he's a lovely man, isn't
nice
he?
He's guy,
a
really lovely man.
But once he steps over that white line,
Just for training.
Yeah.
We talked about the superstars with England. And we just skipped on a little bit. Just want to roll back to Burnley a second and just talk about the ownership. So obviously they've been in the press the last year a lot because there's been a couple of kind of big investors. JJ Watt and his wife, Kelia, I think it is, former NFL superstar. And she was in the women's national team. And Do Perfect, who are YouTube like
How much
royalty.
YouTube do you watch?
Not so much as like a conspiracy or something.
What do you mean?
Just again, another player, Hal Robson, he gets you into the conspiracies. You just end up going down a wormhole, don't you, for conspiracies. But I'm not getting into that.
You won't watch YouTube because you feel like you're going to get like what's the word?
Brainwashed?
Sucked in and you spend hours on it, don't you?
Yeah, you won't watch YouTube because you feel like you're going to get fed
Addicted.
Like conspiracy addicted, stories.
Yeah.
Like
what? Once you start searching stuff, then you go into the next thing, and then you probably, and then you end up coming to a point where you won't actually want to breathe in oxygen because it's bad for you. Do you know what I mean? You get to that level, don't you? You're going to be careful, aren't you?
We need to get Hal on as well.
Hal has got some of the weirdest conspiracy stories you've ever. What's the one he used to tell about the Egyptians and like the pyramids and stuff like that and like aliens and stuff like that?
I've been watching a bit of this.
He genuinely believes this. He was telling the lads, remember, we were sitting at dinner table and he had us gathered round while he's explaining this about giants or something like that.
Yeah, exactly, stuff like that. And then, because he's an intelligent guy, you start believing him. You're like, I think there was giants throwing these rocks up here. And, you're like, and then after you go, what, man?
Mate, honestly, I was watching some stuff on it and it's like the Great Pyramids and like to the absolute degree that they're at true north and all these things. And after a while, you start watching it, and you're going, "What other explanation is there?
How can explain it? Because apparently they had giants back then that were super men or super giants, and they would just pick them up and place them like any
other thing. You're doing him bad.
I think we were on JJ.
JJ. I mentioned that because Dude Perfect, and obviously Dude Perfect, YouTubers. It's probably a bit harsh to call them YouTubers, to be fair, because they are genuine content creators. Like, outrageous. Some of the stuff they do, they are a proper brand, aren't they?
Yeah, massive.
JJ Watt, then. So he's actually really invested in this club, isn't he? He turns up quite a lot. He's there to watch the games.
Yeah, he is. Obviously, he's a legend in what he's done, and obviously to have someone with his knowledge to come into the club is really important. But yeah, he's really invested. I think he loves the Benny and Art. He goes to the pubs under the culvert.
He loves the what, sorry?
Benny and Art. It's a drink that everyone has in Burnley.
What's that?
It's just like a liqueur drink. You have it with hot water. It's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah? What kind of liqueur?
Cures anything. It's like a druid. I think it's like a druid's drink. I have to get you. I should have brought it, actually.
We nearly bought you some Eccles cakes, actually, didn't we?
Yeah. Eccles cake, yeah.
Isn't that Burnley?
No, I don't think so. Benedict, I'll get you one. It's a lovely drink.
What is druid's drink of what?
It's just like an alcoholic drink, like a liqueur, and you know, like have a shot or two with hot water, and you just have it.
And what's it called?
Benedictine.
Benedictine.
You call it Benny and Hot, yeah.
Benny Not.
Benny and Hot, sorry.
Benny and
sorry
Hot.
Sorry, I speak.
Did you say Benny and Hot then? Yeah. You did not. You said Benny Not.
That's what I thought. One word, yeah. I thought Benny and Hot, and I was like, what's that mean?
I'm probably the worst guy to have on a podcast because you have to subtitle it.
We had Lukas Fabianski on last week, who's Polish, and he speaks much better English than you.
JJ Watt.
Yeah, we'll go back to him. Yeah.
Right.
So, to have him in, and like you say, he can give his experiences and his knowledge of being successful, and like I said, to have that character, and he'll broaden it out to America and expand the club. And like I say, he's really invested. You see him at the pit, in the crowd when we're doing well, and he's there for the team. And it's like I say, it's great to have him. And
do you ever see around the changing room, training ground? Do you ever kind of come and work out with you boys? Or?
I've seen him work out, and like you say, the size of him is huge, and he's an absolute machine. And I don't think we had enough plates for him to lift.
On the bench press?
I think he was like, I think he probably could have put more on. He's a machine.
You should put a winger on either side.
I was going to say, sit on it or something.
Jeez.
He could easily do that, yeah. He's impressive, definitely.
Animal, love it. Right, I want to talk about some of your teammates, and you're going to tell me about your teammates, right? It doesn't have to be the current Burnley squad. It could be from Southampton. It could be from West Brom. But a few questions. Who is the biggest joker you've played with?
Biggest joker? I think I'd probably say Alan Neom. Yeah. Or Barnsley. It's too different because obviously Alan Neom just made me laugh constantly.
you would roommate with him, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Were you there at West Brom with the Alan Pardew story?
Yes.
You were, weren't you? Yes, of course you were.
Yeah.
So I've told this story. I have told this story in the past, by the way, so I'm not sort of like breaking confidentially. So when Alan Pardew was the manager, this was after the kind of famous Barcelona taxigate story. And we were in a meeting, weren't we? And Alan Pardew was talking, and Alan Neom just sort of went off on one, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he didn't end the team or something.
Kicked off with the Barcelona the week before, and he had picked one of the lads that had been sort of done the taxi thing or whatever in the starting lineup, And Alan Neom thought that he was going to be starting, didn't he?
Yeah.
But he wasn't starting. He was on the bench. And this lad who had just been in trouble the week before was starting the game. So Alan was not happy one little bit, was he?
No. Obviously, I sat next to him in the meeting and he was just, obviously, a water bottle. And he's crunching. And obviously, it's really quiet and he's just crunching.
But everyone's aware.
Yeah. I was thinking, is he all right? And then he's like, it's crunching. You can see, but he's like this. And then he just stands up and he, what does he say? He's like, you're a shit manager or something. And everyone's like... Everyone just sinks in and it's just like, what is happening here? And then the meeting done and then that, it was just carnage, wasn't it?
I've never seen anything like that. I have never seen a player do that in front of the whole squad to a manager. It was everybody.
And what
was,
was there like repercussions? What was...
I don't think he played that next game. I'll
tell you that. Yeah, I don't think he did,
He definitely didn't play that next game. I know that for sure. But I don't think he'd have played many more games for Alan Pardew, would he?
I'm not sure. I don't know, actually. Remember the time, another story for Alan Neom, I'm going to say it because it's funny. We played Liverpool away and it was cold night and he was the coldest man ever, wasn't he? Remember the kettle?
He was with wrapped the kettle up all the time. Yeah. He'd have a, what they call a hot water bottle and all sorts of
things. Yeah, and he's throwing the ball and the ball keeps slipping. And Pardew was like, Alan, take your gloves off. He takes his gloves off, but he's got another pair of gloves underneath and carries on playing. And I was just like, Alan, man, he's such a great guy. But yeah, I'd say him because he made me laugh the most. But then I'd say Barnes is the joker.
Ashley Barnes, yeah.
He's ruthless.
What would he do? Is he the sort of one who's putting like DP in your pants or
it'd be that,
like that?
It'd be that stuff, but he's just a joker, never serious, but he's a great lad, a great person, like, to have in the change room.
You need those guys, don't
he'd
you?
He'd iron you to death, like, but in a good way as well, you know what I mean? He's a good guy.
Yeah, you need those guys. Strongest in the gym, strongest player you've played with?
Strongest? Victor Wanyama.
Oh, yeah, little beast. Ooh, do you remember the famous spaghetti text as well?
So good. I had spaghetti last night. It was
I
nice.
I don't think he understood. He didn't understand.
How it works?
Yeah, he didn't understand Twitter. He was just like, I don't think he's seen the problem with it.
He's just letting people know.
Jay, we did a podcast on when social media goes wrong for players.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever laughed so much on a podcast in my life.
Wasn't it?
And we've got them all the old Wayne Rooney ones, pick you up in the morning, Rio, and all this lot. But since we did that podcast, there's been a few slip-ups since.
Maybe
we need to do a...
There was that Victor and Ichibi one where... Well, you were with Vic as well, wouldn't you?
No,
at West Brom with Vic. Nah. He was the one where he obviously had a firm doing it for him and they sent him a message saying, hi, Vic, is something like this? No, he sent the firm and saying, hi, something like this. And the firm have just copy and pasted it and it says, hi, something like this. Oh, no. And then it says... Unfortunate loss today, but we'll bounce back.
We go again next week. What about first into training? Who's the guy that you come in and you know he's going to be in the cafeteria or whatever?
James Ward-Prowse.
Yeah?
Yeah, really professional. Another great guy. Like I said, I've been very lucky to play with these players and he's younger than me, but you learn so much from him. He's first in, last out and... Yeah, probably the most professional.
There's no surprise that he's still ripping it up a bit more.
He's got to start getting a bit more England recognition.
He won't. It's too late, mate. It is too late. That ship has sailed. Like I say, I guarantee you, when the international break comes along and he gets a chance to go on holiday, you will take it with both hands and you will see him sunning himself in Dubai and he deserves it as well because he's a proper player. Professional as well. Quickest player you've played with? 100 metre race. Who would win it?
Sadio Mane.
Oh, really? That's a good one.
Shane Long.
Longy, mate. At first, like 30, 40, 50 metres.
Absolute. Oh, he's a machine, isn't
he? He is a machine.
I'd love to play with him because he's just such a good player.
Mate, he would flick his own headers on and run round him. Honestly.
Know, the most annoying thing about him is like he wasn't like a gym guy. Like,
no.
You see lads, I have to go in the gym to obviously keep myself fit and keep myself trying to keep myself up to speed and it's... He's
natural.
Yeah, but he's such a good guy.
I remember about him as a player is that he wasn't, am I right in saying he wasn't particularly tall?
No.
But he could really jump, couldn't
that
he?
Jump, mate. Yeah, that jump was frightening, wasn't it?
Yeah. He'd be so high and powerful. Great, great lad, great player.
Yeah, he was. Underrated, I'd give that to
him. I'm guessing who you'd back in a marathon is going to be James McLean.
There's no one close.
Honestly, no one close.
I've never seen anything like it. The guy is unbelievable.
Right, I want to talk about what is next for Jay Rodriguez. How long further you want to play? 34 years old now. What does life after football look like for you? But first, any injuries? I want to talk about any injuries you might have had in your career and just what it does to you as not only as a footballer, as a person. Does it do you, Eden?
Obviously, I had the ACL, which was at the time was a killer. And
what year was this?
2013, 14 season. So
Southampton.
Southampton.
Versus that, City when you did the ACL.
Yeah.
April time.
Yeah, I jumped up and tried to bring a ball down. Probably shouldn't have done it, but.
What did your leg just buckle? Knee buckled.
I've jumped up really hard, turned, tried to push off, my knee slipped, and you know you go in that position, and then you know you've done something serious. But yeah, that was obviously that they're big injuries, aren't they? But obviously you get your head around it. I explained to you earlier that I think it was like 6 months in, felt really strong. I was obsessed in coming back quicker and stronger. There was just something not right with me. Not right, just a little bit of tightness. So the surgeon wanted to have a look at it. So he went inside.
Would it swell at all?
A little bit of swelling, yeah. So it was like, let's see what's happening. It's going to knock you back, say, a month. That's nothing in terms of the long-term thing. Had the little small surgery, come back, and then that night, it was throbbing. The pain was getting worse and worse to a point where I was like, this pain, I cannot keep.
And that was the day of the surgery. So literally, you had it in the morning and then.
Yeah, I think it was the night, yeah, because I got home. I remember I was in bed, I was just like, this pain's excruciating. And I ended up going straight to, I think it was Nuffield, it was, the hospital. And then it was like 3 weeks of trying to get rid of this infection. So,
you had an infection in it from the operation?
Yeah, I think, well, I still don't know if it was from the infection, but it was after that. So you never know what where it's come from, but you kind of think it is that. But. That's a look of the draw sometimes. But yeah, it was a case of it got to a point where I was poorly, I was ill. You know, my wife she did all sorts in terms of like keeping me upbeat, and the doctors there were great. Like, I've always got massive respect for them people, especially Southampton as a club. You know, they helped me through the toughest times. And yeah, it wiped me out. Like I said, I was quite big, strong and looked after myself, and literally I came to nothing. They were nothing to me, and then they were like, my missus told me afterwards, once they got rid of the infection, they found the bug, it was the bacteria. Then I was like, kind of like, am I okay? They're like, yeah, your knees, luckily it's fine, it's not been affected, now it's just getting yourself healthy, and then you rebuild yourself. So it's basically doing your knee again if it's such another time frame. So I spent probably that in a year, I think it might have been a year and 3 months out in total.
Wow, 15 months.
Yeah, so it was a long stint, but I think when you always have that, you've got a career to play after it, then it gives you different perspectives on life and stuff. And like I said, like my wife said to me at one point, they were saying like, with this infection, we can't let it spread to, you know, your organs and everything. It can make you really poorly. So are we going to chop the leg off, that type of thing? It was like,
that was a genuine part of the conversation.
Yeah, my wife said, and it was like the doctor were talking. I don't think how close it was to doing that, but they were.
That's worst case.
We can't get on top of this bacteria, whatever it is. And then one guy found which bacteria it was, and I was fine.
And literally, you had the antibiotics and to get rid.
Yeah, but then obviously the aftermath, I was just so skinny. So I couldn't sit down. It was like,
what does that do for you then? Because I think people see players that get injured and think, like he's just, you know, he can have a nice chill now. It's like, but it's not like that, is it? They forget about the person. They forget about the human being and what this does, what toll this takes on you. It ruins your life, basically, doesn't it?
Yeah, literally, because all you think about is your knee, and you think about getting back and fit and stuff. So obviously it affects everyone around you. Like I said, my wife's unbelievable. Obviously, we was two down south, and I've got a great family and friends support. So I always feel lucky in that sense anyway. But when that hit, it really hurt me for a bit. But then once you realise that you've got an end goal, you just crack on then. I've always cracked on. I always think there's worse things. You know, it's always a worse situation.
Yeah, true that.
So for me, I'm like, look, I'm very lucky now. So when people say, you know, that time and the knee injuries, you bet you're gutted and that. I'm like, no, actually, like, I'm probably the luckiest person because I've still had a great career and still playing now. So I look at it that way.
That's the beauty of it. You've got to learn from these kind of things, the setbacks. Yeah. You learn from the setbacks, makes you stronger, mate. Yeah. How long were you in hospital for, by the way?
I think it was like 2 or 3 weeks.
Wow.
It's a long time to be in hospital.
Yeah. Wow.
I was off my head most of it, so.
All right, yeah.
Yeah, not too bad.
Morphine, morphine. Gas and air.
Yeah, unbelievable. But yeah, it was a long stint and, like I say, thankfully, touch wood, everything's fine and nothing were affected to my knee. So it was kind of like, crack on, get yourself.
And what's it like now? Good as gold?
Yeah, good. Yeah, you just have to do, I was talking to you, I think it's just your age that you have to do. You know, when you're 20, you just turn up for training, train, then you do whatever you want. But now you're like, you're stretching, yoga, ice baths, he's constantly doing something. It's wise and misses up, but it's what you got to do.
You got to, mate. It's called prehab. You have to do it. You have to get ready. You have to warm up. You have to warm down. You have to eat right. You have to look at the foods that you're eating. I remember getting towards the end of my career and having to take loads more tablets, like collagen tablets, and
really?
All these kind of like glucosamine tablets.
Is that something that you did off your own back, or
no? The club push it. You get to a certain age, so every season you turn up for pre-season training and they do your bloods. So they'll do full scans, full checks of everything, your blood, they'll check your markers, your levels, and they'll check your deficiencies of all the vitamins and minerals, all that kind of stuff. And they're like, right, you're a bit low in this, so you need to take more of that. And at your age as well, you should start taking this. And that's it. In the morning, you turn up, you've got a pot of 10, 12 pills, all sorts of bits and bobs, yeah.
Wow, okay.
And obviously, you don't have to take them, but you'd be a fool not to,
that's
really.
That's good. And Jay, you're 34, still going strong. Obviously, it's got to be in your mind now about what's next. Have you kind of given that much thought?
You obviously think about it. I think you never say never, but I don't see myself coaching. I don't think for one reason, I don't think I'd be very good at it. But yeah, I think...
Why? Why not?
I just don't know. I just find it really hard to put your message across, yeah. You know, and I'd want to give the players everything. I know it takes, you know, the work that I see, it takes a lot out of people to do that. And I think when you've been in football for so long, you kind of maybe try and do something different. But I'm not too sure yet. I think obviously I think I've got a lot to give back to football, but in what sense I don't know. But yeah, I think I've got another 2 years, I'd say, playing. Yep. So yeah, I really want to give everything to that, and then
see what's what.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think podcasting would be great for me. Like I said, it'd be just pure subtitle.
Subtitle like that.
Do you know what I mean?
Benny or not.
But you're likeable though, Benny. Benny.
Should we do a bit of so you've played with some fantastic players. If you could just give us a few words on some of the players that you've played with. Sadio Mane.
Fantastic. Unbelievable. As a great guy, a great person to know and been able, lucky enough to be able to meet and become a friend and play with. But yeah, the things he did on the pitch and still does, is frightening. He's ruthless. And yeah, like I said, on my first session back from the knee injury, and I played against him, and I came back and going, I'm miles off it. And then the physio was like, you were against Sadio, like most players are miles off it against him. So yeah, great person.
Sharp.
Oh, it's sharp amazing heck, to see what he's done. I think in his where he's from, he's got a foundation, and the amount of money he puts back into his home economy is really
well done for you. Dusan Tadic.
Another great person, a really strong character, intense.
Yeah.
Intense.
Is he?
He had the strongest core ever.
Honestly, strongest core.
He was the most ripped I've ever seen, and he probably do so many sit-ups. He was really good for the team. Like really willing to win, works hard, tactically switched on. Like a great person to again learn from and be lucky to play with. But yeah, strongest core.
I've got one, Fraser Forster.
What a geezer. He's class.
I
love Fraser.
Right, so yeah. Why wasn't that reaction for the others where you both just laugh? Like, what's going on here?
He's just a funny guy, isn't he?
He's lovely, isn't he?
He's a lovely guy, like, great top keeper.
Yeah, top keeper.
Massive.
Scary guy, isn't he?
But, like, the softest giant, isn't
he? Yeah, he's a big giant. He's a BFG. He genuinely is a BFG.
We played against Tottenham at home, and I was like, can I get your shirt after? And he's like, yeah, no worries. And then after the game, I'm ringing him like, where are you? And he don't even answer. And so I'm like, she just powered me off completely. And then I go to the players' lounge and speak to Simone, my wife, and she's like, oh, I had a long conversation with Fraser. He was like, lovely and that. Just and then I seen him the next game, and he was like, yeah, I'd rather speak to your missus than you. I was like, yeah. So he's a class guy. I love him to bits.
He is. That's what that reaction is for. Because he is. So, like, he's just a real nice guy. Like, just proper. He's one of the good guys. Like, he's coming on the podcast, by the way. He said he's coming on. But actually getting him to commit to a date is quite hard, to be fair.
All the best, yeah.
Jay, just got some quick fires, but you have been incredible today. Thank you, sir. I told you he was a good guy, didn't I?
You did.
I told you. I told you that. I told you he is one of the good ones. Top guy, Jay Rodriguez. Right, quick fire questions, then we're going home. Bucket list sporting event as a fan. What would you like to go and watch?
I think the Masters. I think everyone says it, I think.
Correct.
I think the Masters, yeah. I'd love to see it, yeah.
Correct, move on. Correct. who's your idol growing up? Sporting idol.
Sporting idol.
Or other.
I'd say R9 in terms.
Original Ronaldo.
Yeah, just even watch now. He still watches clips now, and you're still mesmerised. Yeah.
So when Ben said earlier on about obviously longevity and what else, but at the peak of their powers, I think he's the greatest ever.
Yeah.
At the absolute peak.
That's a good
peak.
Shout. That's a good shout.
It's a great shout, yeah.
He changed that
pace,
like,
power,
didn't he?
His feet and how he scored the goals as well.
Dribbling, finishing, footwork.
He had everything there.
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good shout, that. You got any secret talents? Jay Rodriguez, good at something that people might not know?
No, I was thinking about this. I'm actually crap at everything. I'm pretty boring, honestly. I'm crap. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not great. Like, golf, I'm crap. I play it, but I'm crap. Yeah, nothing. I'm boring, man.
I'd say you're all right, mate. You're not. You're a good guy, you are. That's the main thing, all right?
Oh, crapper.
I don't know, yeah. Phobias. Any phobias? Anything you're...
spiders and hearts, yeah. Hearts.
Yes. Heights.
Yeah.
Yes, hearts.
Put this up there. And planes, actually, yeah. Flying.
Flying, really?
Yeah, I hate it, mate, yeah. We had one recently. It was like, obviously, we have so many storms this year, aren't we? And when you're coming to land, then you have to shoot back up.
Oh, did you have one of them?
I was in a pickle, yeah.
Was that for a football game?
Yeah, it was after... Maybe after Brighton, maybe, I think.
Oh,
I was in a
pickle.
That's
recent, then?
Yeah, I was literally like, what are we doing? I was shouting, why are we doing this? Why don't we just drive?
Yeah, let's get on a coach and know that we're stuck to the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's safe on
Burnley
a coach.
To Brighton. Burnley to Brighton's a good schlep.
Mate, there's players I know that would happily, if you gave them the choice, would choose to go on the coach. Yeah. I would say it's probably 50-50, yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
When it comes to flying, seriously, so many footballers are scared of flying, you would not believe.
So what's the longest coach journey you'd do now?
Probably not far, no.
A couple hours max,
A couple hours max.
And what do you do on the coach? What's your kind of...
We play Pachis. It's like the four games. We play it at West Brom as well.
It's a bit like Ludo.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
A little bit like Ludo.
Yeah, a bit similar to that. We play that, or we just chat and...
Watch a bit of telly and stuff and that, yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
You'll have a couple hours max, otherwise it's flying. Obviously, we're talking Premier League. The lower down you go, saying that, Wrexham, we flew to a fair few, didn't we?
Did you?
Yeah.
In the National League.
okay, and finally then, out of the current Burnley team, which player would you not want on your quiz team? Would you not want?
Oh, I'm glad you asked this, because I said I'd mention him. Charlie Taylor. Get in, I love it. He's special. He's not the brightest, yeah. He's a great lad. He's a tightest man as well.
Oh, yeah, he's Northerner as well, then. Okay, so Charlie Taylor... the person you wouldn't want on your team. Sorry, Charlie, mate. I didn't say it was Jay.
The thing is, he's good at geography.
Oh,
very,
is he?
Very good at geography, yeah.
Oh, so there's a geography quiz.
Yeah, anything else, no. I'll probably just say him just to get him, just to hammer him a little
just
bit.
Just to annoy him. And then who would you want on your team? Who's the cleverest? You could do this for your whole career. The one player you thought, ooh.
I'd probably say Jack Cork.
Yeah.
Always got an arrow word in his hand. Always doing the quizzes.
Nice.
Loves it, yeah. He's a great lad.
Love
Cork, yeah. Class guy.
Love that, mate. Jay Rodriguez, that was fantastic. Thank you so much for giving up your time today. I know it's your day off, but still, we really appreciate it, mate. And whatever the future holds for you, you'll absolutely smash it, because you're a top bloke. And up the Fozcast.
Up the Fozcast. Thank you very much. Cheers.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for watching. We hope you enjoyed the latest episode of the Fozcast. Don't forget to give us a follow on Spotify. Up the Fozcast.